The stage had been set, but tonight, an abrupt cancellation. President Trump suddenly scrapping a planned signing ceremony for a bipartisan bill to lower housing costs.
I'm proud of the work of the House and Senate to get this get people to yes.
But as that news conference was unfolding, President Trump pulled the plug, posting the signing ceremony was canceled until such time as we passed the desperately needed Save America Act, part of his rift with some Senate Republicans. Then came a tense lunch with the Senate GOP.
We're very proud of the party. We like our leader. We like everybody really in the room. I don't like a few people, but that's okay.
The deepening divide coming a day after four Senate Republicans joined Democrats to pass a symbolic measure, urging the president to end the war with Iran.
Iran is making very big concessions. We'll see what happens.
One of those Republicans, Senator Bill Cassidy, told us he lost his temper and said the president also raised his voice while talking about that vote.
I feel like there's answers that need to be given and they've not been given.
The president now saying he won't sign the housing bill, which cuts regulations to spark construction, unless Congress first passes the Save America Act, which mandates photo ID and proof of citizenship to vote.
We have to press for election integrity measures. That's why we've made it a top priority.
Democrats oppose it, arguing the sweeping bill would place too many restrictions on voting.
Instead of doing what the American people need and want, he's off saying, I'm going to keep a bunch of them from voting.
Okay, thank you, Elizabeth Warren, for that commentary. This is Sandy Rios, and there's a lot happening, and I thought maybe I should weigh in on some of the current events because I haven't been doing that. We have a lot going on. We've got an agreement with Iran, we think. We have the president going to the Senate and insisting again that they pass the Save America Act and them refusing again, and yet there is movement. In fact, I'm going to give you an update on that opening clip that I just played from NBC News about just all of it. It's a whole mesh. It's the housing bill that President Trump is now not going to sign. It's the Save America Act. It's the rebellion of the senators. It's what's happening in Iran. It's our relationships with Israel. It's our relationship with other parts of the country. And we're going to talk about that briefly on this edition today of Sandy Rios 24/7. But first, well, we talk about how to save babies all the time and their mothers, because preborn focuses on the mom and the dad, if you'll come and talk to them, because they actually provide ultrasound photos or images of the baby in the womb. And it's amazing. It's so powerful. You know, even if it's not your baby and you see that, it's just an amazing, really to me, a sign of the existence of God and his handiwork. Because how in the world can you explain the intricacies, the development in the gestational period of babies to have, you know, fingers sucking and little eyes and a little cute nose. And you can sometimes even already see that the baby looks like a person, the mother or the father or grandmother or something. And it's very moving. And so what they do is powerful. And so we want to give them a shout out all the time. And they help support this show. That's the least important thing I want to tell you. But I'm grateful that they do, because I'm so grateful they're our partners. It's very important to me to save lives. I felt that way for, you know, since I even became aware of abortion when I was 21. It was shocking to me. So if you want to help Preborn provide those ultrasounds, it's $28 for one ultrasound. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. All right, well, today's going to be short, and I'm going to try my best to give you some perspective on these fast-moving, when have we not, since President Trump's been elected, had fast-moving news. We have a lot this week and a lot in the last couple of hours, and I'm going to try to discuss it and clarify it as best I can on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line.
Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. A lot of complex things are happening, and I'm going to try to fill in the blanks as best I can. This will be an abbreviated time with you today, but I just feel lots of people have been asking me how I feel about the deal with Iran. Personal friends and people that I know, people are getting in touch with me, and because I haven't really done any day of news or updated news, we've done more passive shows recently because I've been traveling. I felt the need to weigh in and just say a few things that I hope might clarify, if it's possible to be clarified at all. I'm going to get to it in just a second, but you heard that opening clip. Yeah, lots of things are like exploding here. Now, the president signed that memorandum of understanding with Iran. It was last week sometime. And I have to tell you that when I read that memorandum or heard the points of the deal, I was really sick. I was just sick. I was just heartsick, because we have already expended so much. I mean, it was amazing. You know, remember that Iran threatened us and told us, bragged in a negotiation that they had enough enriched uranium to develop 11 nuclear bombs. And they were boasting about that to the negotiators, our negotiators. And so that's why President Trump, you know, just within, was the next day? I'm not sure. It's all mushing in my head. But let's say very quickly, the war machine, the American, the U.S. war machine convened, and Iran had a wake-up call in a huge way. And it went on for, what, a month or two? And we have, you know, destroyed their top leadership, destroyed their second-tier leadership. This is, of course, with the help of Israel, who's fighting, you know, the same battle. They eliminated a lot of their top leadership because they're so strategic and so good at that. And, of course, we eliminated their capabilities. We didn't eliminate everything, evidently, but we did such tremendous damage. You saw that, right? We saw it. And the Iranian people came out, something I think they killed. I'm hearing numbers now, like about 50,000 of them who were protesting. And that's just a sickening gut punch for all of this, because I think a lot of us hope that we could deliver those good people of Iran. Remember, they are not Muslim. The Iranians are Persian, and that's not even the bloodline of the Arabs. And so they were invaded by the Islamists in 1979, overtaken. Their Shah was murdered, and it was the Ayatollahs. And they always conquer by murder and intimidation and violence, because most people on this earth, on this planet, do not operate by that. They take power by manipulating or gathering, you know, support in certain areas, and whether it's a tribe or whatever. But they're brutal. The Islamists are brutal, and that's why they are so successful at conquering. So they did conquer the Iranian people in that huge, beautiful country, which had been very westernized. And the women dressed in Western dress, and women were able to go to college and all of the stuff. And suddenly it's burqas, the face covered. Islamic law about, you know, cruelty, cutting off hands and cutting off heads. And it's an unbearable system, and it's not a fair, it's not a just system. And it is a political system. Islam is a political system, not a religious system. Allah is just, oh, by the way, they speak his name a lot, but it's a political system for how you bank and how you live your life and what women can do and cannot do and men can do. It's banking, all of that. It's a political system that is at odds with the American system, and that's thus the problem. Okay, so the Iranians have hated us for decades, and they have done us great harm. But presidents before have just flicked it off their shoulder, like they just haven't done anything, and that included Ronald Reagan. We just did so little to really stop them. And so they got stronger and stronger. And Obama, when he got in office, actually helped them. He loved the Iranians. Remember the first speech he made after he was elected president was to the Muslim world? Anybody remember that? And he tried to tell us that the space program, the Muslims were responsible for our space program. That's the way it went down. You might not remember it, but I remember it. And so Iran was President Obama's like favorite country. It was. Valerie Jarrett, his right-hand woman, still is, was born in Iran. There are all kinds of connections that you probably don't know about. So Iran became more emboldened. President Obama sent them, in the dead of night, millions, hundreds of millions of dollars of cash dollars on pallets to enrich them. And with that, they developed their nuclear program and plotted against us. And they took a lot of that to support their proxies, meaning like Hezbollah and Hamas in Palestine, who did what they did on October 7th to the Israelis. And they have proxies all over the world that they support thanks to American dollars. How convenient. And oil money. So it's gone back and forth. Sometimes there's been sanctions, depending on who the president is. But, of course, under Obama, there were none. Under Biden, there were none. They just were allowed to run crazy. And they developed all of this capability. They enriched uranium. And they've been busy bees underground. And so and now threatening the world. That's just what they do. And they of course, their theology is that they're going to take over the world. They are going to dominate, and they're going to Christians and Jews will either be dead or they will bow the knee to Islam. So all that to say, we went in there and we really blew them away. We decimated their capabilities. So we all, and then suddenly we pulled back, and many of us wondered, what? You know, the Strait of Hormuz was held captive by the Iranians, and all this oil, the tankers could not leave, and this has gone on forever. And some, we just wondered why are we not doing something about this? How can we let them keep this grip on the Strait of Hormuz? So I'm not going to go further with that just for a second. I would just say that a few nights ago, or this week sometime, you heard the story at the top of the show by NBC News that four Republican senators joined the Democrats in the Senate to vote on a War Powers Act, which it has no teeth, but it means that they do not support any involvement, any fight against Iran. And so if it has no teeth, what difference does it make? Well, the difference it makes is that it's on the world stage. What do you think the Iranians think when they hear that the Senate, even Republicans, have turned against the president on this stand against Iran? What do you think they think? What do you think that our allies in the Middle East think when they see our Senate doing that? And our people, the Republicans, President Trump's people, what do you think they think? So this week, Senator Rick Scott from Florida, he's my senator. I like Rick a lot. And he bypassed John Thune and invited President Trump to come to Capitol Hill. And that was pretty bold, very bold of Senator Rick Scott. So he invited him to a luncheon with the senators. I'm not sure if they were all there. I'm not sure. But certainly the ones that oppose him and are fighting him were there. And so the idea, purported idea, was that President Trump was going to talk to them about the Save America Act. And when he got there, he also told them there's a housing bill that's on the table, passed by both houses. But look, I have mixed feelings about this, and I'm not this is not the final word. I'll just tell you that Elizabeth Warren is the Democratic sponsor, and Rick Scott is the sponsor for the Republicans. And in spite of all the good things they say about this bill, my understanding is it has a lot of bad stuff in it, because Elizabeth Warren, shall we just say, the communist socialist Elizabeth Warren, loves this bill. She loves it for a reason. Okay, so President Trump decides when he gets to that luncheon, he announces to them, this is supposed to be a signing ceremony after the luncheon. I'm not signing the housing bill. Not going to do it. Not until you pass the Save America Act. So these senators go into this closed-door session, and it just explodes. The tempers flare. They get loud. Cassidy, as I understand it, by out of his own words, stood and was cursing and mad. And President Trump told him to sit down several times. And I'm sure Trump said a few choice words himself. I wasn't there. I can't tell you. But I'm just guessing, based on what I'm reading, too, that they really had it out. But most of it was out about the War Powers Act, and also about his failure to sign this housing bill. But mostly the War Powers Act. And I think, I don't know what President Trump said, but I'm guessing he probably talked to them about the damage it was doing in trying to get the right deal with Iran, and if we need to go back in, it's just a loss of strength, the perception of strength. And so, ironically, I think I'll use a clip to illustrate this. Yeah, there was out of that lunch came something very interesting, and it went like this, clip four.
A planned lunch meeting with Senate Republicans devolved into a shouting match after President Trump suddenly refused to sign a bipartisan bill aimed at fixing the nation's housing crisis, which overwhelmingly passed Congress.
I was disappointed because I thought that this had become a priority.
Democrats pounced.
And Donald Trump decides to have the toddler temper tantrum and announces he's not going to sign it. This bill that would help build more housing at a lower cost, that'll bring down prices.
A recent report found a nationwide shortage of 10 million homes. The bill would ban Wall Street investors from buying single-family homes and make it easier to construct homes so they can instead be sold to families. Trump's own press secretary called it one of the most significant pieces of housing affordability legislation in American history. Lawmakers in both chambers were blindsided when President Trump called the bill a matter of minor importance on social media. Trump said he would not sign it unless Congress first signs his so-called SAVE Act, which would require Americans to show proof of citizenship to register to vote. The SAVE Act doesn't have the votes to pass in the Senate. Also a source of tension at the meeting, President Trump was furious at the Republican senators who voted with Democrats to limit his war powers in Iran. Overnight, two of those Republicans, Bill Cassidy and Rand Paul, changed their votes after a briefing from the White House.
Wait. I thought, you know, we couldn't change votes. It's like in stone, like on the SAVE Act. We can't change those people's minds. We don't have the votes, says Thune, and laughed, actually, on Maria Bartiromo a couple of weeks ago, was watching. He said, well, Maria, we don't have the votes. I wish I had the clip I'd played for you. Very serious, our leader in the Senate is, the Republican leader. So they keep telling us we just can't do it. But Trump, over that lunch, flipped two of those senators. He flipped them on the War Powers Act. It was Rand Paul and Cassidy, Bill, who's been so angry with President Trump. They're the ones that fought in that meeting. So two senators flipped. Isn't that something that you could actually go there for lunch and have it out, have a fight or talk, and you would actually persuade two senators to change their vote? Isn't that something? Imagine what we could do if the kind leader of the Senate, and of course I say that tongue-in-cheek, could have a conversation or allow other conversations like that. So I'm just saying it is possible, and they're lying when they say it isn't. And I'm very glad that they changed their votes on that War Powers Act. Now, back to Iran. The agreement with Iran, you know, basically, I guess if I could just sum it up in just a few words, and I will do that, because I'm not capable, and nor do I want to take the time to read, you know, those provisions change all the time, too, so I'm going to give you the you know, 10,000-feet version of this. It's a 14-point document. It spells out provisions for reopening the Strait of Hormuz, and you probably have been listening. I think, I don't know if it's half, or there's more than half of those ships that have come through the strait safely, and maybe now more even today. I don't know. And so so that's happening, and then we have agreed to ease certain financial restrictions on Iran. Iran is saying all kinds of things, beating their chests about how their money that's been, you know, set aside with sanctions, they'll get that money and rebuilding money and all kinds of stuff. And I don't know. But they are beating their chest right now. They feel like they've won this. And then the expectations, the third thing addressed, is the expectations about the nuclear program, the yellowcake uranium and all of that. So memorandum of understanding. When this came out and this whole notion that we were going to stop our aggressive actions against Iran and just put the brake on and pull off the pressure, I confess to you, I was extremely upset because I don't understand what's happening. And I think about, you know, the disappointment of our relationship with Israel, who is under existential threat from Iran. Iran wants to kill them. They're very open about that. They want to kill us, too. They're very open about that. But Israel's an easier target, and that's been their goal. And so Hezbollah in Lebanon has really been attacking Israel. So Israel's up there fighting them. And so that was part of this whole talk. And President Trump told Bibi Netanyahu he could not, he needed to stop fighting. And I think, what are you talking about? They can't stop fighting. They have made such grounds, and they've been personally attacked. Their people have been killed. That's upsetting to me. And our whole relationship with Israel has been turned upside down, turned on its head. I want to give you just an example of that. This is clip three.
Two global leaders basking in mutual admiration.
With our cherished ally, Israel.
We had a tremendous success together, and I think it will only go on to be even greater success in the future.
The letter I sent to the Nobel Prize Committee, it's nominating you for the Peace Prize, which is well-deserved.
Donald Trump is the greatest friend that the state of Israel has ever had in the White House.
After the high comes the hangover.
If it weren't for Donald Trump, Israel would have been eviscerated.
The problem for Israel is not Donald J. Trump. And anybody in Israel who thinks their biggest problem is the President of the United States needs to wake up and smell the reality of the situation that country is in.
I thought that clip really illustrated it beautifully, how we were working with Israel hand in glove and beating the Iranians. I mean, just beating them, stopping them after all these decades. And I was really excited about that, I have to tell you. But it's not going to affect me personally today, but it is affecting the Israelis. They're this little tiny country. Who else is going to help them? The United States has been their best friend. And in the midst of this confusion, President Trump and Benjamin went after Benjamin Netanyahu and said some terrible things. And I think that President Trump cursed at Netanyahu. What? How do you explain that? Insisting that he stop fighting so that there could become a peace deal. What kind of thing is that? And so I find myself, you know, grieving over that because I want to work with the Israelis. I want to help them. And then there's Lebanon. We've heard a lot about Hezbollah, and that's the Iranian proxy that's been attacking Israel. So I get this from, I'm not going to identify the person right now, but it's a person from Lebanon. And she says the situation in Lebanon is dire. Because now, keep in mind, they are fighting, Hezbollah is fighting for their existence. Israel has pretty much wiped them out, but the battle's not over. And so here we are, they're fighting. You can just see it in your mind's eye. And then President Trump orders Israel to stop fighting. So my friend says the situation in Lebanon is now dire. Hezbollah is so empowered and going after the Christians, threatening to slaughter them. They're even kicking out Christians who have homes in Muslim towns in the south. They are threatening to take over the government and unseat Christian ministers in the government. It's horrible. As well as putting out videos about it all over the internet. This is how much they are emboldened. This is a video I received yesterday from a Christian friend of mine from my hometown. This man is telling the Christians, "We are going to slaughter all of you as soon as this deal is done. Wait and see what we're going to do to you." And I'm just going to pause for a second because I want you to hear one of these videos. This is what they're facing, the Lebanese Christians are facing as a result of us withdrawing and making Israel stop fighting. This is clip two. Wait and see what we're going to do to you. He goes into detail about what the Zionist pigs are going to suffer, the Christians too. He talks about how they don't want to coexist with Christians. They don't want any Christians to exist among them. And then he starts quoting Islamic history, and then it gets really, really nasty in the interpretation there. Just listen for a second. Okay. All right, if that doesn't make you sick, that's enough, Adam, thank you. If that doesn't make you sick at your stomach, I just imagine if you're a Lebanese Christian and you're listening to this and there are videos all over the place, they're beating their chests because they feel they have won. And that's the result of us stopping this conflict. So the detriment to our Israeli friends and the detriment to our fellow Christians in Lebanon and then the disappointment to the world seems a very devastating decision from President Trump. But I want to share something else with you because I've been having to think through this whole thing and pray about it, really. And this is the conclusion I've come to, and you don't have to come to this conclusion, but you've asked me, many of you have asked me how what I think about this. Is this what I think? I really don't think President Trump had a choice, and I'll tell you why. Because we are heading headfirst, quickly, accelerating toward the midterm elections. You can see how the country feels. You can see how the left feels. The left may not have the numbers, but they've got the propaganda. They hate President Trump, and they whip up, they hate the Israelis, for heaven's sake. And they whip up even regular people who are inclined to support President Trump but don't quite understand the issue with with Iran, are being whipped up against that war, thinking, being told that that war is all about Israel, which it is not. Iran has been our enemy since 1979. They've killed hundreds of our Marines in a Marine barracks over there. They were responsible for all those IDs who blew up. Look around you and look at those commercials on Fox about wounded veterans. How do you think they got wounded? I mean, lots of them got wounded in other ways, but many, I don't know how to count it, lost their legs, their arms, their faces. That's from those IEDs, which is, guess who paid for it? With the dollars that Obama sent them on pallets. It was the Iranians fighting against us. Not declaring war in that war in the Middle East, but very much involved in it. And so there's more to say about what they've done through the years, but I hope that gives you an idea. That's not Israel. That's us. That's us. That's what they've been doing to us. And not a single president would stand up to them until President Trump. Jimmy Carter was a disgrace. And we should do a whole thing on that sometime, but we've been cowards to them, and rightfully so. And they shout in their parliament, death to America, death to America, because that's what they plan on doing to us. You have to know that. And when they say they have the material to develop 11 nuclear bombs, they do. They do. Who are they going to, were they going to bomb Italy? Are they going to bomb England? No, they're going to bomb us. If you have children and grandchildren, you have to understand this. They are an existential threat. And just because we have a deal with them doesn't mean that they're not an existential threat. But go back to why I think President Trump had to do this. Because the midterms are coming. And because the American people do not understand what I just said to you about our history with Iran. And they don't understand what a threat Iran is to us. To us. Israel is under the greatest danger because they're smaller, but they're coming after us. Don't doubt this. Don't doubt this. Okay, so this is happening, but the American people don't know that. And what they're concerned about is gas prices. Gas prices have climbed so much, and regular people really are suffering. And so, interesting, with the combination of people in general, because of the propaganda and the lack of knowledge, believing that our war with Iran was about Israel, and with them not understanding that Iran hates us and they're coming after us, and they will come after us. They will never stop because they, as they say, they love death more than they love life. They mock us for thinking life is sacred. They don't take it their lives seriously or ours. So, I saw a poll. Two-thirds of Americans polled say that gas prices will shape their November vote. Two-thirds. 49% of registered voters say wars or conflicts affecting global oil markets are most responsible for current gas and fuel prices. Another 8% blamed federal government policies. 9% blamed oil and gas companies. So we've been paying extra fuel costs, and it's very hard on a lot of people. So it's a justifiable concern, but they don't have the full picture. But this is the full picture of the midterms. We're coming toward the midterms where the left's propaganda is so powerful, and we see communists winning in New York. We see them now moving into D.C., trying to, and around the country in various races. We are under, at home, an existential threat from within. You know that. And so let's just say that we go into the midterms in November, just coming a few months from now, and let's say we lose both houses of Congress, or even just one house of Congress. Let's say the House of Representatives, because we only hold that right now by 2-seat majority. What do you think is going to happen? What is going to happen if we lose the midterms in November, and let's say it's the House, because that's very likely, and they only have a 2-seat majority? What do you think is going to happen? Well, I'll give you an idea. They will proceed immediately to impeach Donald Trump. They've already said that. They've sworn it. And am I saying that this is just about Donald Trump? We have to pull out of Iran and hurt Israel and turn our backs on our allies because of Donald Trump? I am not saying that. But I'm telling you that President Trump is the one thing that's holding this country together. It's not the House. It's not the Senate. We are surrounded by traitors in our own party. I'm a Republican now. Yes, I am. We're surrounded by traitors in our own party, and we have worse traitors in our midst who hate this country, communists who want to take over. So we've got this election. We haven't sorted out our voting problems. President Trump can't get the Senate to vote for the Save America Act. No, 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 no. Tom Tillis tells us that's just silly. What do you say about Mike Lee? He's just like untethered from reality. He just wants to get clicks. That's the reason he's trying to get the Save America Act passed. That's what Tom Tillis said. Tom Tillis, the Republican senator from North Carolina. This is what President Trump is facing. This is what we're facing. So they might pull this off, getting the Congress defeated, the Republican in the House and the Senate. How do you think Tom Tillis is helping us win this? How do you think Mitch McConnell, how do you think he's helping us win this November election? I could name half a dozen of the Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski. How do you think they're helping us win in November? They're not. They are undermining the whole message because they hate President Trump, and because I would argue they love themselves more than they love their country. And so this is what we're facing. If we pull a win off in November, it'll only be by God's grace. And it's going to take everything we have to stop this avalanche of traitors and ignorance and just plain enemies. So President Trump, we lose the House. And we might lose the Senate, too. That would be interesting. So that means that if we lost the Senate, they would do away with the filibuster, unlike John Thune, who says, oh, it's just a sacred thing. It's a thing we do in the Senate, and it's a lofty and noble thing, and we keep that so the minority has some rights, and we just can't do away with it, he says. It's not constitutional, it's just a rule, but trust me, the Democrats don't feel that way, and they've said very clearly that if they take power, they will do away with the filibuster. Now, what does that mean? That means that because they're unified, remember, they all march in lockstep except for our guy from Pennsylvania. Fetterman, yes. He's the only one who votes like a sane person. So they've got enough votes to do anything they want. And believe me, they will. They'll start on day one, and they will reverse every single thing that has been done and accomplished by President Trump. And that includes our economy. That means businesses coming in here with the, you know, reducing the regulations. It will all just, if you can imagine, you know, cameras that run full ahead and then suddenly they go backwards in fast motion, you'll just see the whole thing unwind. And trust me, you and I and your friends and family will be the target of punishment like you've never seen. Because did it ever occur to you that the left hates you? They hate us. You remember COVID? They hate us. Remember now they're, you know, a lot of the left are killing people. They assassinated Charlie Kirk. What do you think they're going to do if they get this big win in the midterms? And so I make the argument to you that this is a Sophie's choice for President Trump. He has to choose between having victory, a full victory over Iran, which we were so close to getting, helping our Israeli friends finally get free from that oppression, helping our Lebanese Christian friends finally get free from the oppression and danger of Hezbollah, and much, much more, or saving his own country, the United States of America. I believe President Trump had to make the decision he made, which makes no sense to us on the surface, in order to save this country. Because now he's back at it, fully engaged. He's trying everything he can to shore up people that are running. And he's trying to get the Senate to do what's right. And yet they won't. And yet they won't. These are the obstacles. So I believe he did what he had to do. I do. I hate what it's doing. I hate it's just, again, a Sophie's choice. And if you ever saw that movie, it comes down to a woman having to choose between letting one child die or another. And she had the power to choose which child died. Now, who wants to make that choice? But if you don't make the choice, then both children die. So I'm just telling you, this is hard. This is hard. The one thing I would say is if President Trump can get back engaged in the political process and we can shake the trees enough to make that Senate do what they should do, because otherwise we're going into this election with nothing different, hardly anything different, no voter ID. How do you think Mondami won in New York? He won because illegal immigrants, non-citizens, voted. That's who elected him in New York City. And that's what's going to happen everywhere if we don't stop it with making sure citizens only vote. And so that's what's at stake here. And it is that dire. It is that dire. And I think President Trump made the only decision that he could possibly have made. So that's my thought of it. And if you have a different view, certainly, you know, you can. I'd love to hear what you have to say. Go to sandy@afr.net. Sandy@afr.net. I should add just a few more things. I talked to a military man who served 3 terms in the Middle East, Iraq and Afghanistan, and asked him some pointed questions. And he said to me, Sandy, Iran is so vast, it's so big, that the only way we could continue this is a ground invasion. And if we go in with a ground invasion, it will take thousands and thousands and thousands of troops, because of the size of the country. And so it would take us years and lives to actually prevail, to get to their yellow cake uranium and do all the things, you know, do an overthrow of their current government. He said it's just not doable. It's just not doable. And he also said that the reason the Iranians were able to hang on to the Strait of Hormuz is because it's not quite as simple as it looks. There's a real long shoreline that's the shoreline of Iran, and they still have control of a lot of that. So practically speaking, unless we go all in, which we did, and then we pulled back, but we'd have to go all in with lives, American lives. Are you willing to send your boys there? I think in many ways it would be noble if we were, and we just did them in for the rest of, you know, our natural lives. But you have to, a great leader has to weigh all of this. I think he's weighed it all and he's made his decision, and I think it's the only one he could make. So I hope that helps you. And again, if you have a different opinion, I would love to hear from you. Just go to sandy@afr.net. One other programming note before I say goodbye to you. Bruce and I are going to be in Washington, D.C. next week. For the 4th, we'll be there for all of that. And I'll actually be doing my podcast on the stage there, I believe, on the 3rd of July. I wish I could be more specific. It's the 3rd of July. It should be around 4 o'clock, 4 to 7, something like that. And if I get some more information about that and can find a way to drop in those details, I will. So, all right. These are difficult times. We need to pray for our president. pray for those people serving us in the house who are going through, the good people are going through so much right now. They're trying to do what's right. They're trying against terrible odds and paying personal prices for doing the right thing. They pray for Mike Johnson. Pray for all those that are fighting like crazy to do what's right. Pray for our president and pray for the senators. A few they be, but there are a handful of them, maybe more than a handful, trying to do what's right. Pray for them too. And in fact, I'll just close in prayer today. Father, oh, this is just too much for us. It's just too much. We cannot see our way through. It's too complicated, and it's, I guess, kind of silly that we ever thought we could figure things out. So now it's clear to us, thanks to you, it's clear that the world is so complicated that we need a Savior, and we need a King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and thank God we have one. Lord, we love you and we trust you, and we just pray that while we're here on earth, that you would help us to do what's right, to fight in the best way possible, and to give us strength to finish well. And I ask that in the name of Jesus. Amen. All right. Well, I want to thank Preborn. Of course, you can help them by going to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. And thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.